By now, you all know we love everything spooky. Well, we know plenty of you do too, and so we have something to tell you about.
It's a Scary Tom podcast. Each week, there's a new episode by a different independent creator. They cover topics like ghosts, freaky places, aliens, and so much more. Like my favorite, exorcisms and demon possessions.
Of course.
Of course it was. So today I was listening to an episode by the indie podcast State of Fear, which was all about the exorcism of Emma Schmidt from Iowa. Do you know the case?
I listened to the same thing today. It's a good
Why
one.
Why are you want to be like me?
I know. Well, I was like, oh, this...
this is definitely something I should
Yeah. It
to.
Was a good one, though.
So it's pretty good. It's it tells all about how the exorcism occurred over several decades, mm-hmm. which is completely crazy.
It was. Whether you're looking for variety or to discover your next binge-worthy scary podcast, you will love Scary Time. Check out the link in our show notes or search for Scary Time in your favorite podcast app.
Now tuck in your feet. Under the covers and turn on your nightlight and read all about demons and listen to demons and all the things demons. It's scary time.
This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Kentucky discussing a horrific sexual assault that turns deadly.
Then, we'll talk about a case involving bigamy, love triangles, and financial ruin. So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Bluegrass State.
College is supposed to be one of the most fun and carefree times in your life. That small window in time before real adulting takes over. You're making new friends, experiencing freedoms like never before, and learning who you are and who you want to be. College, where future generations begin. But along with all these new, positive things come new temptations. Drugs, alcohol, sex, frat parties, and so much more that young people aren't used to can turn into a deadly combination. And prove that sometimes you have more to worry about than just getting good grades. Melissa, Katie, that's what she was known as, Autry, was a freshman at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green. Have you ever been to Bowling Green?
I haven't.
Do you know what's there? Like the Corvette Museum.
I did not know that.
It's like the Corvette headquarters.
I had no idea.
That's the only place in the whole wide world where they're like built and manufactured.
Seriously?
Yes.
I didn't know that. It's a fun fact.
It's a fun fact. You know, I love cars.
Uh-huh.
She was a pretty petite blonde who was a cheerleader in high school and ran track. She was also very active in clubs and other activities in her high school. Katie and her little sister had a rough childhood, though. Her mom was schizophrenic, and they kind of bounced between family members and then eventually landed with Jim and Shirley, an older foster family. They were pretty strict. He was ex-military, but the girls, like, thrived on the structure. Katie was able to attend Western Kentucky University full-time. She had a roommate, Danica, also a car girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, what is this?
Interesting.
Anyways, who had a car?
Danica had a car.
She wasn't racing it, but she had a car. And so she took Katie everywhere. Katie drank and was kind of known as a party girl, and also known as the hoe on the second floor, is what they called her. She lived on the second floor of her dorm. That's
In
what she was.
A friendly joke? Or like she,
I mean, she
didn't know about the nickname?
Yeah, she knew. It was college. I mean, she grew up in a very strict home, and yeah. Now she's out. So she wanted her independence. And actually removed herself from foster care. So when you're technically can be in foster care up until a certain age, and she was not at that age yet, but she went down and took herself off.
She was in college though,
yes.
Right? Okay.
But I think it's like 19 or 20 maybe.
Okay. I didn't realize
that. I think the rules are different mm-hmm. per state. So she withdrew herself from foster care, which cut her funding. Because as long as you're in foster care, your college is paid for. But she wanted to be independent and not known as a foster kid, quote unquote. So she took herself off, like she's an independent adult now. So she had to drop down to part-time in school. She worked at a smoothie shop part-time and also began stripping at a place called Tattletales, trying to save up money for a car. And she was making over $300 a night.
Oh, I'm
dancing,
sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, why would you want to work at McDonald's when you could? I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. So, we're not shaming strippers at all. You do you, boo. She had a friend with benefits named Maurice, who was a WKU football player. But he had a girlfriend that lived out of state, so it wasn't anything serious. But I think she wanted it to be more serious. So on the night of May 4th, Katie and her friends were pre-gaming at the house before going to a frat party at the Pi Kappa Alpha house. So by the time they get to the party, she's already drunk. And sometimes, I know a lot of girls and boys like this, schmancy, that cry when they have too much to drink.
Yeah.
She was one of those. And her friends often had to babysit her because she would get very upset.
Yeah.
So on this night, she was particularly whiny because Maurice was also at the party and she had asked him to dance. And he was like, no, or I'll dance with you later. I'll be right back, and left. So then she goes and finds him and creates this big scene. So she creates this big scene and is now, like, dancing all over everybody. She's belligerent. She's drunk to the point where the frat security guard asked her to leave. Like, you need to get out of here. You're annoying everybody. Yada, yada, yada. Mm. So Ryan, who was one of the frat boys, was the designated driver that night. So, which is very responsible.
Yeah, I'm glad that
they designated someone. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to take you home. And Danica, who was kind of sick of having to watch her all night, because then she can't have fun. We've all been there. You're like, oh, my friend acting like an asshole. Just take her home. So she's like, yeah, that's fine. Take her home. Ryan would later tell police that he drove her straight home, watched her stumble inside, and left. So anyways.
To her dorm?
To her dorm, okay. Yes. So Danica called Katie around 2:26 a.m. She said she sounded drunk on the phone. Katie told her she was scared because someone just came into the room. She said she didn't know who it was and handed the phone to a guy who told Danica that he's the one that brought her home and she was sick, so he was making sure she was okay. Katie said she was going to bed and hung the phone up. That was at 2:28. So it was a 2-minute phone call. At 4:08 a.m., the fire alarm goes off in the dorm. This is nothing new. False alarms. Somebody's cooking popcorn.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
I set mine off once.
Yes. People are stumbling out, half drunk, whatever. Firefighters are searching to clear the building, and they find Katie. She had been set on fire. They carry her out on a sheet, and she's covered up, and they are shocked the condition that she's in, that she's still breathing.
She had been set on fire?
She had been set on fire. She kept mumbling for them to take her home.
Oh, my God.
They were unable to start an IV on her because she was too burned. At the ER, she was stiff and still smoking.
Oh, my gosh.
40% of her body was burned. Doctors say that that most likely killed most of her nerves, so that helped with the pain. Katie had a T-shirt wrapped around her neck, bruising on her face. One side of her head was sunk in, her left eye was swollen shut, and she had puncture wounds. So stabs.
Oh my gosh.
But they noticed an unusual pattern of the burns. There was nothing on her back. So in a house fire, typically you get burns to your back because you're asleep. So you're usually like on your side or on your stomach. And so this wasn't the case. The burn started at her breast and went down to her thighs.
So it was just isolated
to
that area?
To that area.
How does that happen?
So I'm about to get graphic. If you want to skip ahead, if you're squeamish, skip ahead about 10 seconds or so. So Katie's pubic area was burned so bad they were unable to start a catheter. The opening where the catheter is typically inserted was completely burned off. ER called police to stat flight her to Vanderbilt in Nashville, but the police were taking too long, so they called state, local, and campus to try to get them to take pictures because they were certain she was going to die and this was going to be a homicide investigation, and they needed photos. The helicopter from Vanderbilt got there before the cops. So finally, a state trooper gets there and he takes the pics. They weren't going to wait for the pictures because they were like, she is too bad.
We needed her to get to,
so luckily he got there right when the helicopter landed and was able to get photos of her body. So the doctor said when she arrived at Vanderbilt that they thought she was dead, quote unquote, and just still had a heartbeat.
At that, because she had mumbled, take me home in the beginning.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So the dorm calls Danica and tells her there was a fire and that Katie was taken to the hospital, but they didn't know how bad it was. Danica thought she had been drinking and probably burned popcorn or something. Like, she wasn't sweating. You know, she wasn't, like, freaking out. Police later interviewed Danica and asked her if Katie was suicidal or ever tried to harm herself. And then finally they told her how bad it was and that she was at Vanderbilt in Nashville.
Why were they asking her that? They thought that she did that to herself.
Again,
my face is if
I'm about to get graphic. So this is another part where you may want to skip ahead. Katie was sedated in Vanderbilt. She was put on a vent and they cut slits in her skin to allow her to breathe. Because when you get burned that bad, your body gets stiff. So it was compressing her lungs and she wasn't able to breathe. Hand sanitizer had been inserted into her vagina. She had been sprayed with hairspray on her breast and genitals before she was set on fire. She had been raped, beat, sodomized, and stabbed before they set her on fire. I know, it's the most horrible thing I can ever imagine.
This might be the worst thing I've heard since we've been doing this.
So she went from critical to severe critical. The foster family was notified. They called the biological family. Foster family was allowed to go inside and see Katie. The biological family was not at first, which pissed them off, which I'm sure it did. But the foster family was the only ones allowed to make decisions. And the bio family did not agree with the decisions they were making. Everybody's tensions were high, obviously. Katie died on May the 7th, 3 days later. An autopsy said she died of complications of thermal burns, and they ruled it a homicide. She was buried in her high school cheerleader outfit.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is so sad.
Danica was told by the family to not attend the funeral because they blamed her for this happening.
Who blamed her?
The family.
Foster family?
Everybody. There were only 150 people that attended her funeral, which is a lot of people. But when you hear these other stories and there's like this big, it just kind of
because they didn't allow.
Kind of makes me sad. I don't know. So police start trying to pin together the night's events. They found a hairspray bottle in the hallway. The door was locked. The smoke alarm had been ripped out of the ceiling and blankets had been wrapped around the sprinkler system in her room.
Oh my gosh.
And all of her jewelry was gone. They interviewed everyone from the party. And two people stuck out to them, Luke Goodrum and Stephen Soles.
Was one of those the guys that drove her home?
Who was, no,
that
Ryan.
Was Ryan.
Ryan's the guy that drove her home.
Huh. So he wasn't on their radar first?
Mm-mm. No. So, let me tell you a little bit about Luke. Luke was 21. He is the step-grandson, his stepdad's dad, so his step-grandfather. Is the owner and founder of the Dollar General stores. So money. His name is Cal Turner. So he fought a lot with his stepdad in high school and eventually moved to his dad's in Kentucky, where he meets his girlfriend and gets her pregnant and they get married. He had several domestic violence arrests and a divorce in 2004 when their kid was just 2 years old. He smoked weed. He sold coke. He didn't go to college. All he did was play video games all day and get high. So he, you know, they get divorced. So he starts dating this girl named Brittany. And they get into a fight one night over some guy calling her phone. So he slaps her, kicks her, chokes her to the point where his roommate calls the cops and he runs. A couple hours later, he comes back and sees he has a missed call from his friend, Steven. So Steven and Luke, they met in high school. They didn't go to college, either one of them. So Steven was known kind of as a follower. He is biracial. That's going to be important later. Okay. Anyways, I wasn't just saying that to be a dick. So he's biracial. He's known as being a follower. He lived with his grandmother. Didn't really have anything to do with his parents. He had a reputation as a thief and a mooch. He had no car, no job, and basically did the same thing as Luke. Just kind of sit around and smoke pot all the time. Played video games. He called Steven back. And Steven wasn't allowed to hang out at Luke's house because he had this reputation. And Luke's roommate was like, I don't want him here. He's known as a thief.
Yeah.
So Steven's like, well, why don't you just come over, you know, and hang out with me? I'm going to this girl named Sarah's house. And then we're going to a frat party later. So Luke's like, yeah, I'll come hang out with you. So he meets up with him at the bowling alley. They go to Sarah's. Now they're pre-gaming. So by the time the frat party starts and they get there, Steven's drunk. Like, he throws up in the car and passes out in the car, and all the Sarah and Luke and the other people with him go inside to the frat party. Same frat party that Katie's at. So no one, Steven or Luke, interact with Katie at this party. At 1 a.m., Steven calls a friend to come pick him up. Like, he's ready to go. He's sleeping in the car. He feels like shit. He's drunk. We've been there. It sucks. You just want to go somewhere. But the friend says no. About that time, Ryan comes outside with Katie. Now, he's the DD.
Yeah.
And so when you're at these big college parties, like, you just take whoever's car. You take your drop off and you're coming back. So he sees Steven in this car and he's like, I'm going to take your car and take her home. And he's like, well, perfect. I need you to drop me off at my friend's house anyway. So he's like, all right, cool. So
they didn't know each other?
No. Because they didn't go to college there. Steven or Luke didn't go to college there. They're just there with friends that are at this party. So he takes the car, takes Katie, drops her off, takes Steven, drops him, and comes back to the party.
Okay.
A couple hours later, Luke and his friends walk to another friend's dorm. The RA sees them about 2:15, 20 minutes later. Ryan picks up Luke and takes him back to the bowling alley, and he says he drove to his mom and dad's, and he was there by 3 a.m. So that's everybody's story. That's where everybody's at.
Got it.
Okay, got it? I know it's a lot.
But I still have no idea who did this.
So, police are investigating. They question Steven. He denies being at our dorm. He says, a friend of mine picked me up. That's where I was. I never went to her dorm. A friend picked me up. The friend that he says picked him up comes forward and tells police he called me to pick him up, but I didn't go pick him up. So he's lying.
Well, I thought Ryan dropped him off.
He did.
Okay.
But he doesn't tell them Ryan took him. He doesn't say anything about it. He says a friend came and got me and took me to his house.
Why would he be lying about that?
Steven?
Mm-hmm.
Now. So, friend comes forward and says, I didn't pick him up. He called me to pick him up, but I didn't. He says, the next morning I woke up and Steven was on my couch. He said he walked there, but I didn't believe him. I then took him back to Sarah's, and then Sarah took him home. He said the reason why he came forward was because he felt like Steven knew something, that he was acting really weird, and his story kept changing because he had asked him, like, where were you? What were you doing? And he kept changing his story. So then this guy goes to the cops, which is what you should do.
Yeah.
Police call Steven's grandmother's house. Steven answers and says he's Steven's cousin and Steven's out of town.
Oh, geez. A
couple days later, Steven's dad actually calls the police and says that Steven confessed to having sex with Katie that night. So now police are like, we've got to bring Steven back in.
Yeah.
Because he's lying. In the meantime, they interview Ryan, the DD that night. Ryan says, the first time you interviewed me, I lied. Steven was with me, and he got out when I dropped Katie off and said he wanted to, quote, holla at her.
Oh, no.
They asked for Ryan's DNA. Since he had lied, now he's suspicious. He agreed, but then he lawyered up.
Okay, well, why did, if it doesn't have anything to do with him, why would he have lied about that?
Yeah, why are you lying to him?
Why, he doesn't know this guy.
He's a kid and probably, he's a kid and may think he would get in trouble. So police talk to Steven again, and this time he admits to having been in the car with her and also having sex. He says she invited him up. He took the stairs because he was scared of the elevator, which is why there was no CCTV footage of anybody. And also why the RA didn't see him. He says she got sick around 2:30, about the same time her friend Danica called and I spoke to her. So he's...
This is the guy in her room. I just assumed that was Ryan.
This is the guy. He said he didn't hurt her. Someone else kept calling her, and when he left, there was someone in the hallway, another guy. Police thought he was covering for a friend. That's why his story kept changing. He said they were having sex, and someone knocked on the door. Katie got up and answered it, and it was Luke. And he's like, I didn't think it was odd that Luke was there, because how would I know who he knew? Which, I mean, that's valid. I don't know all the people you know. You know what I mean? Luke comes in and ask if they can pull a train on Katie.
Oh, I'm sure he asked.
Katie was like, absolutely not. And at that point, it really pisses Luke off, and he proceeds to hit her, cover her face with a pillow, and Steven says, that's when I walked out.
What?
I came back in, and Luke was raping her.
Oh, my God.
But his story kept changing. He said he took off running because he knew something terrible was about to happen, and he didn't want any part of it. Police arrest him right there. They're like, okay.
I hate them both.
Yeah, they're arresting you. So then investigators bring Luke in. He says he got home, and his dad was yelling at him for being irresponsible and not taking care of his kid. They try to, you know, kind of slip him up by saying, we've got your hair, we've got your DNA, we've got your fingerprints. But nothing. He was like, no, you don't. I wasn't there. You don't have any of that. So it didn't work. They didn't trick him. But didn't matter because he was arrested and charged with capital murder, rape, sodomy, and arson, just like Steven. Mm-hmm. Prosecutors were seeking the death penalty. Luke, with all his Dollar General money, hires a high-profile attorney. Steven gets a public defender.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It took them 2 years to go to trial. Steven would testify that Luke wore a condom and put it in his pocket, and that he forced Steven to put sanitizer inside her vagina and forced him to have sex with her. Steven says he was terrified of him because he was very impressionable and kind of a follower, and he was this rich white boy with all this money, and he was this poor biracial kid who never had, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a perfect storm. He also made him spray the hairspray on her, he said, and set her on fire. He said Luke raped Katie for more than 30 minutes before he killed her. He said Katie was fighting with everything she had, but there was nothing she could do to hold off the attack by Luke. Steven pled guilty for taking part in exchange for the death penalty being taken off the table. But he had to testify against Luke. That was the conditions.
Yeah.
Four pictures that were taken in the ER were shown to the jurors.
Mm.
Several of the jurors were crying.
I would hate to be on that jury.
But there was zero evidence tying Luke to the crime. There was no fingerprints, no hair, no DNA, nothing. Only Steven's fingerprints were found at the scene. They were found on the hairspray can. He said he was told to do that to destroy evidence of his semen. Steven sat with his face mostly covered during the whole trial. The defense questioned his inconsistencies and the letter he wrote while he was in jail that did not match up with the interview questions. And he said he wrote that on purpose because he knew people were going through his stuff in jail and he wanted to trick them up, like throw them off. Luke's defense said lack of physical evidence, no eyewitnesses, and his parents testifying that he was home just sealed the deal. He wasn't there. He was acquitted of all charges. After the jury deliberated only 2 hours, they completely acquitted Luke. Luke is free.
Right now.
And he's got a Facebook. He's got kids. Yes.
You know,
he said, I'm stalking him. Oh, I know. You're going to. He said he was glad justice had prevailed when he walked out of the courtroom. Prosecutors argued that the sprinklers caused water damage, fire damage, destroyed most of the evidence, and made it hard to collect anything. The defense also said that Stephen had told too many people his story and had never mentioned Luke until police brought up the fact that he may have been covering for someone else. And that's when, which is plausible. Yeah, I mean, they're not wrong.
If there's nothing to tie Luke there.
Nothing. Other than him saying, but he told the story so many times to so many people and never brought Luke's name up until the cops said, who are you covering
for? I'm thinking from a jury's perspective, they want to see, you know, beyond reasonable doubt that if there's no DNA, there's not really anything tying Luke there. So what are, their hands are tied. I mean, they can't just be like, well, I have a feeling.
Exactly. So Stephen Soles was found guilty and will serve 6 life sentences consecutively, plus 20 years, with no possibility of parole. Speculations of campus police and police department botching up this investigation by saying they refused to turn over crucial evidence before they lost it, or they messed it up.
Oh, okay. So it's one or the other.
So supposedly several people, since all this has happened, have heard Luke say, no one cared about that girl anyways because she was worthless and poor. She was a foster kid.
Oh my God.
She was a stripper. She was white trash. I want to punch him in the face. Just so happens, the same year, Luke's family donated $5 million to Western Kentucky University.
What a surprise.
Shocking, right? And you know what makes me like kicks me in the stomach of this whole story? Well, there's a lot of things, but this just like Katie's dorm room was turned into a janitor's closet.
Are you freaking kidding me? Oh,
it,
my God.
It, like, makes me Are you freaking kidding me? A janitor's closet. That, to me, is like, you pieces of shit.
They do that to her, who is
the victim.
She's the only one dead.
The victim.
Period.
And horrible, heinous death. Janitor's closet.
What money did they donate in her name, his family?
Exactly.
What did they honor
Bunch
her?
Bunch of bitches.
Is there a, did they donate for a scholarship in her name at that college? I doubt it. No. Oh my God, I'm mad.
Lacey's whole neck is
I'm
red.
So mad.
Isn't that terrible?
Not that I'm saying, I don't think the other guy's off the hook either. That's
no.
I don't care if you're a follower, whatever. That's whatever. Horrific. But like, this is all terrible. To just be acquitted and he's roaming
like
free.
Like, she grew up with such a tumultuous childhood.
Yeah.
And still made good grades and went to college. And so, I mean, who cares? She was a stripper. Whatever. Cardi B was a stripper.
Yeah, who cares?
Nobody says shit about her. I'm just saying, it doesn't matter. Money talks.
God, if that's...
Money fucking talks.
It It'd be nice to be a rich kid, I guess. That's so true. And it sucks because a lot of public defenders, it's not just that they're not as good.
They're green. Busy. And they're... Yes.
I'm not saying they're all bad.
No, not at all.
Some definitely are. But, you know, they're working their asses off. They don't have the time to commit like these wealthy, rich, high-profile defense attorneys are. And it's just not fair. It sucks.
Gloria Allred's not representing.
Yeah. No.
No.
God, that sucks.
Yeah, it's bad. So you want to hear some terrible statistics now that I've got you all wound
now
up?
I'm,
there's,
I'm going to drive to...
Do not drive to Western Kentucky University, Lacey. There's a sexual assault every 68 seconds in the United States. 25% of young women say their first sexual experience was forced on them.
Doesn't surprise me.
Close to 25% of all college women are sexually assaulted during their first semester. Freshmen,
doesn't surprise me either.
Most vulnerable. 80% know their attackers, and most of these attacks go unreported. In 2017, there were 29,000 criminal offenses on college campuses, and 40% of those were forcible sexual offenses. 50% of college sexual assaults occur between August and November every year. You're just getting all wound up.
I'm so mad.
Lacey's so mad right now. I mean, it's very, yeah. it pisses me off too. So the National Sexual Assault Hotline, if you are being sexually assaulted or you have been sexually assaulted, it doesn't matter if it was 6 months ago, still report it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You can call 1-800-656-HOPE, H-O-P-E, and it's 24/7. You can also go to RAIN.org, RAINN.org, and there's a confidential form you can fill out, and I mean confidential to an extent.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a whole section of helpful tips or places you can go to get, you know, help or hotlines to call or therapy or whatever you might need.
How much has this family donated to this?
Girl, Lacey's in it. She's wound now. Give me your Paloma. So there's a show, Southern Gothic. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
This actually has an episode, season one, episode 35, if you want to check it out.
There's 35 episodes of the first season?
Girl, Southern Gothic's been on for...
But it's not broken up into...
I guess it's going to be like ours.
Sidebar.
Season one.
Season 1,000.
51, yeah. 51 episodes.
Okay, no shade.
There's also a book by William Van Meter, Cruel Heart, and it's all about this story, and it's on Amazon.
Okay.
It's really good. Check it out. He's actually a Bowling Green native and kind of dove deep in on the story. Check it out. It's good.
I've never heard of this, and this is just so tragic.
It's awful.
I can't.
Oh. It's not even about being tragic. It's awful. Like you said,
100%,
it's shitty.
Yeah.
You donate $5 million. I'm done. I can't. We need to...
Tell me something funny.
I don't have anything funny. I'm a lot of fun this week.
I'm sweating. Oh. Charlie's restless.
Charlie's
ready to get a Bowling Green and attack.
He's laying his head on me.
So this week we got a few different cocktails
purchased for us.
And this one's a special one because it's for someone's birthday, which is awesome.
We love birthdays.
It's actually today when this episode airs, it's her birthday.
Her 21st birthday.
Yes.
The big one.
Exciting. So listener Shiera has purchased us a cocktail.
In honor of Stephanie.
Yeah, her daughter Stephanie.
She said, birthday.
Yeah, have a raspberry lemon drop, Stephanie. And we actually had never had a lemon drop before. Well, raspberry lemon drop. So we went to Rocktown Distillery, a local place.
And they made us one.
Yes.
And it was quite strong.
It was strong. Well,
but
to be fair, they didn't have raspberry puree on site. So we pretty much said, just do what you got to do. Make us a raspberry lemon drop.
And it was good.
It was good.
That may be my new favorite drink.
Yeah, it was really good. But anyway, happy birthday, Stephanie.
Happy birthday.
I hope it's a good 21st. And thank you, Shiera.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
On the morning of May 11th, 2019, a group of travelers were at Louisville International Airport in Kentucky, getting ready to board their American Airlines flight bound for North Carolina. They kept waiting and waiting to board their flight while the staff at the gate started looking tense. Soon, the passengers found out what the holdup was. The pilot had been arrested.
That sounds like some shit that would happen to me.
I was about to ask.
Not to get arrested, but to like wait for a flight.
And the pilot had been
arrested.
Yeah, he was still wearing his uniform when he was booked. So Christian Kit Martin, the pilot, had been arrested in a cold case triple homicide that had occurred 3 years earlier in a small town in Kentucky. And at first they were thinking, oh, it's some small thing, like he was drinking, someone found out about it, or, you know, like, oh, he can't fly the plane because of that. Nope, it was pretty bad. Well, that would obviously be very bad, too. Not that I'm saying that wouldn't be. But you know what I mean? Like, they didn't know he was... On November 18th, 2015, Calvin Phillips was discovered dead in the cellar of his home from a gunshot wound. His wife, Pamela, and a neighbor, Edward Dansereau, were found dead in a nearby field in Pembroke on Rosetown Road near the Tennessee border. They were both inside Pamela's car, which had been burned. So, another burn situation, but this one, they were burned after they were murdered.
sick of these people burning people.
Yeah. So it turns out there was a connection between them and the pilot, Christian Martin, who went by Kit, K-I-T. And for the past 3 years, police were investigating Kit as a prime suspect. However, when he was arrested, the police didn't offer any hints on what evidence led them to the arrest. So a lot of people didn't really know what was going on. Well, the day after the murders in 2015, a SWAT team raided and searched Kit's house, but they didn't make an arrest, and they didn't make an arrest for 3 years. So there was another connection beyond them just being neighbors. Calvin Phillips and Kit Martin were also connected through a 2016 court-martial case. So in May of 2016, Kit was acquitted, another acquittal, of sexual assault, but found guilty on lesser charges, including mishandling classified information. Calvin Phillips had been scheduled to testify in December of 2015 in the case, in which Kit Martin, then an Army major, was accused of sexual assault charges involving several juvenile witnesses. But Calvin was killed before he could offer his testimony. He was murdered 2 weeks before he was set to testify. Kit had been accused by several juvenile witnesses claiming he physically and sexually abused them, dating back to 2008. In May of 2016, Kit was acquitted of the charges. However, he was found guilty by the court-martial, you know, on the lesser charges, like I said, mishandling classified information, but also 2 counts of sexual assault. Kit was a pilot, but he joined the military in 1986 and shifted between service in the National Guard and on active duty through August 2016 as a cavalry scout. The prosecutor said Kit had downloaded classified military information, such as emails and a kill list.
A kill list? Is that like a burn book?
It didn't get more specific than saying a kill list, so I'm not quite sure. But he downloaded that to his personal laptop while stationed in the Middle East, and then later took it with him to Germany, Rhode Island, and finally his home in Pembroke, Kentucky. Sounds like trouble.
That's not good.
Yeah, so guess how they found out? Guess who made the allegations of him mishandling the classified...
His wife.
Close.
Girlfriend.
Ex-wife.
Well, that's what I meant.
You knew. You knew it would go there.
I knew it was going to go there.
So this can get kind of confusing. So I'll break it down. She was his ex-wife because he had had the marriage voided.
Is that the same thing as annulled?
So it's not an annulment or a divorce. It's voided because he found out Joan was married to somebody else already.
Well, then that doesn't count.
Yeah, well, technically they weren't legally married, but she was still married to another man. But because they did go through with a marriage and everything, they also had documents. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. They had marriage licenses and all that stuff. So it did legally have to be voided. It wasn't just like, oh, we're not married. They had to go through.
It had to.
They had to go through the paperwork of getting it technically voided.
Girl, I can't even get one. I can't even get a second date. Definitely not going to be a part of a bigamous lifestyle.
No, but she wasn't with the other guy. She had just said she couldn't afford to get a divorce. And they just kind of, I don't know. I don't know how expensive that would have cost. Be at least say that.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to give you a little piece of free advice, Lacey. People are liars.
No. Ain't that the truth? In interviews, he didn't call her his ex-wife. He called her the ex-bigamist. Okay, so in another twist, Kit said that Calvin and Joan were having an affair. In an interview, Joan did say that she was close with Calvin and his wife, Pamela, because they were close neighbors, and she was like a second mom to her. Pam was a second mom to Joan. However, a former Pembroke officer said that he once accidentally walked in on Calvin having sex with someone who was not his wife.
I mean, it happens.
In his warehouse. Then, 15 minutes later, he saw Joan walk out of the warehouse.
So that reminds me of that Real Housewives episode.
There wasn't a back door.
Where Luann's in the kitchen, and they're like, oh, he was married. Do you remember that episode? Mm-hmm. She's like, don't be uncool.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's classic. Well, so once Kit and Joan split, it got really ugly. No surprise. She accused him of rape, sodomy, child abuse. She had a few kids. Child molestation and stealing a military computer. So while mm-hmm. she was accusing him of all that, she's mm-hmm. like, also, he has his computer. You,
mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. So Joan said that when she was moving out, Calvin, her neighbor, went with her so that she wouldn't be alone, not because they were an item. While they were there, she said that's when they found the military computer and CDs with secret written in permanent marker across them. First of all.
Stop.
If you want to make sure no one's looking at your CDs, don't write. I saw the pictures. Secret. In red permanent marker, black permanent marker, classified secret.
Do not play this. Eyes off. Like, what? Top secret. Come on. That's like Scooby-Doo 101.
So, what do? They look at these CDs because who would not do that at that point? Well, anyway, Joan said Calvin was convinced that Joan should turn those in because Calvin didn't think that Kit should be, he didn't think he should have those types of things. So she did, and she gave it to the FBI. Well, since he was the one that found the items, along with Joan, he was also scheduled to testify before the court-martial. He told investigators that Joan hadn't mentioned that she or her children had ever been abused. Doesn't mean it wasn't true, just means he was unaware of it. Can't say if it was or wasn't. But he did say that Joan told him she was afraid of him and concerned about her welfare. So there was something there. Kit was dismissed from the army. I read that he had served for approximately 30 years at this point. He was also sentenced to 90 days in prison for that. And during this time, I found a video clip of him. It was on Nashville television station, but it was a 2016 interview calling Calvin Phillips his star witness, which makes no sense to me.
No.
He was claiming, oh, well, Calvin was going to set things straight. Well, Calvin's son, Matt Phillips, says otherwise. He said his father had evidence that was harmful to Kit's case in military court, which seems obvious to me, too. But still, why kill Pamela? Why kill Edward? Wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe he thought Calvin would be alone. Well, the prosecution claimed that they were just collateral damage, essentially. Well, after Kit and Joan split up, she went to conceal and carry classes with the neighbors, Calvin, Pamela, and Edward. She said she was afraid of Kit. And the guy in charge of the class confirmed they all four went to these classes together. On the day of the murders, Kit told a reporter he recalled the barking of a dog in the middle of the night. And that was it. He also said, I don't know why anyone would want to do something like that to them. Once the trial finally started, witnesses had plenty to say. Matthew, Calvin, and Pamela's son testified that after the murders, he had to clean up their home, you know, like you do when going through a parent's home. And he said he found multiple pieces of evidence there. He found a set of military tags with Kit's name on them. Why would they be there? But yeah, they were lying on a shelf. Very unusual. He had also claimed he hadn't been there in a long time. The other evidence included the .45 shell casing, the fragment of a bullet, and the CDs related to court-martial proceedings. It turned out that Kit did, in fact, own a .45 caliber handgun. Police found it in a safe in his house. Edward's longtime partner, Sarah Jackson, took the stand and said she felt something was wrong when she didn't get a phone call from him. Like usual on the evening of November 19th, and he didn't answer multiple calls. Also, Kit had told Edward in the past he wanted a divorce from his then-wife, you know, kind of wife, Joan.
Yeah. The bigamist.
His kind of wife because she was married to someone else. But Kit claimed he would not have killed Calvin over sleeping with his wife because Calvin helped him out. He said Calvin got him out of the mess with his wife and he had moved on. Like, there weren't hurt feelings there. I don't know.
This is a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of he said, she said.
Yeah.
Kit took the stand, tried to defend himself. He claimed that Joan had orchestrated the whole thing, the murders. She was behind it.
She was behind it all.
Revenge, yeah. He said she just wanted to get back at him.
Sounds a lot like Adam and Eve. Blame the chick.
Yeah, if this was revenge, she orchestrated killing three people. I know she couldn't have done it herself if she were the one involved.
Right.
There was no evidence that she had anything to do with it. So he testified at the time of the murders and when Pam and Ed's bodies were believed to have been taken to a nearby field and burned, that he was celebrating his anniversary with his fiance. He did have a fiance at this time.
How is this dude? I'm going to need to see
this. He's a pilot. He's not.
That's true.
That's it.
That's a hot occupation.
That's it. So I watched some of his testimony. Oh my gosh, it's long. I didn't watch the whole thing. But he said that the day of the murders occurred, he was at home with his fiance Laura, and even her kids saw him. They stayed up late together talking, and they were in what they called the naked pretzel.
What is that?
So he explained.
Good.
This is basically when they are nude and intertwined and talking. They call it the naked pretzel.
I mean, we've all done that. I never called it.
Anyway, yeah, he didn't do it. They're in a naked pretzel. It couldn't have been him. Well, he had back cameras, you know, surveillance, you know, not a ring, but something like that.
Right.
Not in the front, but that he had them in the back. And it does show him leaving the house briefly, like a couple of times for like a minute. And he said the dogs were whining, so he was checking on them. He also said that he set an alarm on his phone, I assume, but it didn't say. But he set an alarm to wake him up to check his new kerosene heater. I don't know anything about kerosene heaters, but he said that November through March, he would set an alarm sometime in the night to make sure the wick was still wet.
Yeah, he was.
Well, he said the...
like, oh, he's God. Just... You gotta make sure that wick right is wet.
It. Yeah, I walked into it. Okay, so he said the alarm was set around 1 a.m. That would be fine, but he went to bed after 11 p.m., so... Wouldn't you think you would set the alarm at like 3 or 4 a.m., not 2 hours before you, after you go to bed? Like, why not just check before you go to bed if it's going to be...
I don't know the rules to...
I don't know anything about kerosene.
Getting your wicks wet.
I'm sure you do.
Attacked!
So the prosecutor thinks he set an alarm to wake up because that's when he was going to sneak out in the front, not in the back, because he didn't have any cameras, and drive the car into the field and set it on fire. A neighbor told the police he heard an explosion at about 2 a.m. and the next morning found the burned vehicle. The bodies were so badly charred that police knew there were two of them only because they found two skulls. That's how bad it was. And they found out that both had been shot in the head. The defense noted that there were no eyewitnesses to the crime, no DNA, no fingerprints. And he said he would present forensic proof that the bullets that killed the victims did not come from his client's gun. But I didn't see or read that anywhere. According to USA Today, Matt Phillips, the son of Calvin and Pamela, said his parents were, quote, direct opposites. Wiping away tears as he described their lives and looked over childhood photos featuring him and his parents that prosecutors presented Thursday. My mom was incredibly kind. She had a warmth about her, and I think, biased as I may be, was incredibly rare, Matt Phillips said. My father was energetic and outgoing and wanted to see the world, and my mother was quiet and reserved. They're just gone, he added, and the concept of home, where you go for Thanksgiving or for Christmas or just go home, this concept of home has been taken. It's gone. Edward's daughter and only child, Erin Hilton, remembered her father as a professional jazz pianist and passionate lover of life. Erin said she and her husband have a 12-year-old son and 8-year-old daughter who referred to their grandfather, Edward, as Poppy. That's so cute.
That's cute.
I know. She said the families continued to meet with therapists to process the grief over his death. She said his spirit was infectious and his spirit made everyone feel like they were loved. If you were lucky enough to form any kind of relationship with him, it meant he loved you. There were no gray areas. You had a loyal friend for the rest of your life. After an 8-hour deliberation, the jury found Christian Kit Martin guilty on all charges. It included 3 counts of murder and arson in the killing of his former neighbors. The jury recommended that he would be sentenced to life without benefit of probation or parole on all 3 counts of murder. The jury also decided that the length of the sentence for the other 7 charges... The jury also decided the length of sentence for the other 7 charges that he was found guilty of doing. These sentences will be served concurrently. A sentencing hearing will be held in Christian County on September 2nd of this year. So it hasn't happened yet.
So this is a fairly...
Yeah. Well, you know how it is, even when a murder occurs several years. So it just wrapped up in June, but he still has to go to this in September. He can face life in prison. Assistant Attorney General Barbara Whaley called the acts a cold-blooded, calculated, military-style operation. She also said that he was the only person with a motive and means to commit the crimes. So yeah, it's not totally wrapped up yet, but I'll, you know, research it and give an update if anything happens. But my sources are NBC, AP News, Courier Journal, Washington Post, and then I watch videos of the trial online. But anyway... We have another sponsored cocktail.
We do.
Yes, another one by Lucky Lou's.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Lucky Lou's crew.
This week, Lacey made me.
I did.
A Paloma.
I finally made the Palomas. Did you like them?
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Although I do feel like you poured a shitload of tequila in there.
I usually measure because...
I don't know who you're measuring for. I am not a 22-year-old sailor. Just saying.
No, I usually get a measuring
glass.
But if
you are a 22-year-old sailor, email us at United States of America.
I'll link your personal email address. But no, I usually measure. I didn't this time. But anyway, tequila, squirt, a little OJ, a little grapefruit juice, and some tajin sprinkled in there. Thank you, Lucky Lou's. We appreciate you so much. And if you're ever in Little Rock, go check out their bar. They have the smallest patio in Little Rock, but it's very cute. Dog friendly, people friendly.
Jukebox friendly.
Yeah, good music, good drinks.
Good company. Games,
board games.
It's a good time.
Yeah. So go check them out. We love them. We have something else. Oh, we reached our 100 reviews.
Yay!
I was nervous that the 100th review would
be gonna
really
be a shitty one.
Our 102nd one was really bad, but that doesn't matter because it wasn't the 100th.
Well, you know what? You win some, you lose some.
You win some. Yeah. Do we need to address that? I don't know. So we do look up how to pronounce names and places. We do. We will pause the episode, Google it, play it. We'll write it phonetically in our notes.
And also, just because we don't pronounce it the way you pronounce it, do you say, like if you're at Sonic, do you say root or route?
I change them. I say both.
See?
Yeah.
Which one's right? Which one's wrong?
I know.
Doesn't matter.
Especially with older cases when there's not, like this one had a lot of news coverage, so I could hear the last names. Some of them are older. You can't hear how their names are said, and people say names differently, like Brianna, Brianna. I don't want to ever be disrespectful to a
victim. Ever.
I want to get your city right. But all of this to say, we appreciate the feedback.
We do.
But if you notice something we say wrong, email us what we said wrong, because in this case, we don't know. Email us at unitedstatesofmurder@gmail.com. We'll fix it. We'll address it. We'll say, you know, sorry. Moving on to better news. We might be at 50,000 listens. I'm going to refresh the page.
Awesome.
If we're not, we'll be when this airs, at least.
At least.
So we're going to try to do a fun giveaway.
We've got to
figure it out.
We need to do a giveaway for a 100.
Mm-hmm. Reviews.
B, 50,000 listens. And C, our 1 year is coming up.
It is coming up. So
we're going to do a whole episode of nothing.
We did it. Okay. So right at this time, 6/21 on, what's the day? The 29th of July, we have 50,019 listens.
Woo!
Downloads. Yay!
So we need to do like a whole.
We got to do something special.
A whole fun special episode of all the celebratory things.
Yeah. We'll figure something out and do something to celebrate and do a giveaway. We need to, other than just our stickers.
Yeah.
But we love spamming people with our stickers.
We do. We love a sticker.
Thank y'all for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder, US of M Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. And where are we next week?
No idea.
Alabama.
Alabama.
I've been up it, down it, sideways. I've been all over Alabama.
She's sex pretzeled?
No.
Naked pretzeled Alabama. What was it called?
Sex pretzel.
Was it a sex pretzel?
And he didn't even like really laugh when he said it. He kind of looked like,
like, doesn't
pretzel.
Everybody do a sex pretzel?
Like, dude, why are you saying this?
To be honest, everyone does. Anyways.
It was just, I'm going to Google what Alabama is. Do you know?
It's the, no. What is it?
The Cotton State.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Also known as Heart of Dixie and Yellowhammer State. Do you know what that means? The Yellowhammer State.
Is that a bird?
That's a good guess. Let me see.
It's going to be a bird.
Oh, it is. It's a state bird.
Ha!
Good job.
Knew it. All right. Fun giveaways in Alabama.
Stay tuned.
Bye.
Bye.